the small. Lay a big hit and pass a kick ball. This game is for us all. From Seattle down toward the Keys, this game is you, this game is me. Cast dogs and steer, be the tree. This game is America, so sing it loud with me. College football forever. College football forever. Downtown LA, Starkville sip. One week you're up next, take a dip. Run the rock, let it rip. America, all say, can you sing it with me?
We just stepped on our feet with a hot nail broken across our nose. Whoa, Nelly!
College football forever. College football forever.
College football is a year-round discussion with these two. Here's J.C. and Morgan. Mike Morgan of ESPN and J.C. Sherbert of 24/7 Sports have you covered, beginning right now.
And for those watching live, we say good morning and welcome. For those watching in other day parts, good afternoon, good evening. If you're an insomniac, it could be a little bit of both. We welcome you to another installment of JC and Morgan, fastly approaching number 300, and hope everybody is doing well. We have some updated kind of formatics stuff for those of you that have been tuning in on iTunes, for example. There's been a little bit of a shift there, so I understand some of you had problems finding where we are, different platforms. JC can get into all that later because it's much above my head. But for example, on the last episode, if you were watching on YouTube, we had a massive YouTube turnout for the post-national championship game. And, you know, if you're watching on X, nothing has changed there. But we'll get you up to speed on that because we know you want to find us, and we appreciate you having us as part of your regular regimen, your regular diet of shows and podcasts. Speaking of regular diet, we are powered and presented by Advocare. You've heard me talking about this for a while. I have been taking Advocare products for 13 years, long before JC and Morgan was a thing, actually. I got introduced to it by some guy at the gym playing pickup basketball. You see this if you're watching on YouTube? Yeah, right in front of my boys from Varsity Blues. I hope Wes Kanan football doesn't mind this. I hope Buddy Kilmer is okay with me plugging away. I do not want your spark. Yes, you do, son. You want my spark. You want my Advocare products. I take this every morning. It's better than coffee. There's no sugar, and it's got vitamins and actually like healthy stuff. I told you I've got kind of a health food nerd as a really good friend. He's like, Mike, well, let me see what the ingredients on this spark. It's like, oh, damn, that's really good stuff, and it's healthy. So is Rehydrate, which is like a Gatorade, but again, without all the sugar. You've got creatine products. If you want gains, bro, you don't have to see Meathead Mitch at the local GNC. It's all delivered to your door, and 20% off. No matter how big the order is, promo code Mike Morgan. Go to Advocare.com for all of your health needs, vitamin needs, sleep needs, whatever the case may be. We need more football talk, JC, because we just had a national championship game. And I thought college football was a winner in 2025. College football fans, we love them, and we are two of them. But let's face it, JC, we can be a cynical bunch. I mean, quite frankly, a lot of times we're just a pain in the ass because we complain about a lot of things. Like, we love our beloved sport, and we're very sensitive about it. It's like our child that has some flaws, and we can point out those flaws to our child, but damn if anybody else does. That's my boy you're talking about. We're going to have an issue if you say that again. college football, there's so many things working against it. But as always, I maintain it doesn't matter how bad the currents are trying to stymie the sport. It's just such a good product that it's going to prevail, and it continues to do record numbers in ratings. You're starting to see on some of these postseason games, these are NFL-type ratings. Nobody touches NFL ratings. NBA, Major League Baseball, nothing. You're starting to see that now. And I feel bad for everybody out there. JC and I live in a little bit of a fantasy world. When we go to games, we're not buying a ticket. I understand. I hear it from fans all over the country. Well, the good news is they just redid the stadium. The good news is we just increased our NIL budget. The good news is we just got that 5-star. The bad news is I'm paying for it. Because I got to pay for a PSL. I got to give a gift in order to keep my season tickets. I hear all this stuff. And, man, I'm sympathetic to it. I don't blame a lot of fans who just say, you know what, the hell with it. I'll watch it on TV. But the fact of the matter is the stadiums are still getting fannies in the seats. People are still watching. And I thought, JC, 2025 ended on a really good note. You and I, we're doing a show past midnight after that Miami Indiana game. I don't know if we have a single, I'm sure we do. I don't think we have many Indiana fans that listen to JC and Morgan. Probably have a few Miami, and a lot of them are SEC and had no stake in the game, but they wanted to listen and they wanted to react. Chat row was blowing up as they had comments on a great game to culminate a great season. So from that standpoint, I think we're in really good shape. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about a day that used to be very special to you, and also very stressful to you. We are doing this on National Signing Day, and I just went 5 minutes without mentioning it because National Signing Day, as we used to know it, is not nearly what it was. I mean, I used to have Jamie Newberg and all these guys on my show on National Signing Day, and I knew like that's going to be the talk for 3 hours. It's not anymore because most of the big-time players already signed. And then you go in the portal, and it's not as big a deal, but I want to get your thoughts on that. We'll get a little bit of G5, John. And yes, you want it. You clamor for it. You ask, where has it been? We'll throw a little Fiverr or Dimer in there. Three movies that I think everybody will have some thoughts on and will like. And all of that, I say, good morning and welcome, Mr. Chicago Bear himself, J.C. Sherbert.
Yeah, it was a tough loss for the Bears, but Obviously, I think since we last, that happened before the Indiana game. That was I don't remember exactly, but yeah, it was before the Indiana game. Cause I remember, what a season. And, the unfortunate part about it is, and this is good for engagement. I'm not talking about social media engagement necessarily, though that's part of it, but you know, fans nowadays in college football, when I started in recruiting, you mentioned National Signing Day. You know, January, when that business began, and now it's a monster, that's when we made our money, was January, because everybody lined up four official visits or three official visits in January, and there were a few smattered throughout the football season, and everybody's visiting and making a decision, and there's a ton of signing dates. So it's high drama. It's like election day in politics. Mm-hmm. Because you're essentially campaigning and convincing, culminating to a day where people that you don't know what's in their minds are going to go make a decision that impacts you. So it's very similar to Election Day. Since about 2016, 2017, when they had the early period, the second signing days had some drama here and there. And then when the portal kind of came online and hit everybody in the face, it's dead. I mean, it's no longer. I mean, it's a relic. Today is, I could have taken today completely off if I were in recruiting, and it wouldn't have mattered. And it's more about the December period. Now they're talking about changing that. Greg Sankey's recommended that you should maybe go back to the February signing period. I don't know how that impacts early enrollees because a lot of players do enroll midterm now for spring practice. Maybe if they move spring practice to the summer, some kids may stay in high school a little longer. And if you sandwich it into the portal period, you're going to have a lot of drama in January. January, up until this year when they moved the portal period, it was a quiet month, and it was December, which stinks for those of us that like the holidays and maybe like to relax a little bit. But the portal, because in the transfer portal, Mike, you are getting some young players sometimes and developmental guys. It's not like JUCOs where they have to complain, but by and large, you're getting known quantities or known entities. And I've seen it in basketball recruiting, and in college baseball recruiting is more popular than ever, because what happens is you have a certain segment of all fan bases that they keep up with everything, all the high school recruits, blah, blah, blah. Football, there's more that keep up with the high school, because high school football is still community and locally based and all, you know, the top five stars, four stars, all that. It's been there for 20 years. But with the portal, you get more fans that aren't necessarily diehards but love watching all the games on Saturday, that have seen a player play, and they're in their mind thinking and projecting that next season onto them, and so they're more interested. You know, college baseball recruiting, one of my good friends covers it like a saint, and I always call him a saint because it's all in the summer. Half the kids go pro. There's not a consensus rankings, but now I was on with Bill King at 1 June, and he's like, JC, listen, he's like, I've talked more about college baseball recruiting than ever. And I'm like, yeah, because they can look and say, well, this kid played at Tennessee and hit 280 in the SEC, or this kid played at A&M, or this kid played for Santa Clara and they went to a super regional. Basketball is almost all transfer now. And so as far as roster building, which is recruiting essentially, the portal has sucked the oxygen out of the room to a certain extent. Really, Mike, your big-time high school recruiting drama happens in June and July now, which is all, again, positive because, like I said, the fans of the sport remain engaged almost 12 months out the year now, whereas it used to be maybe go away for a while, but not any longer.
It's crazy because I'm just reading this article. Only one of the top 300 prospects listed on 24/7's composite rankings remains uncommitted heading into today. So the hay is in the barn, right? Like, so you've already got these rankings, and I don't know if they're subject to change much, because most of it has already been determined. You've got Southern Cal 1, Bama 2, Oregon, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas, Miami, Texas A&M, and I'll just go through 20. LSU, Michigan, Washington, FSU, Oklahoma, Florida, North Carolina, Texas Tech, South Carolina, Clemson. And that does not include Portal, correct? What I just read? Yeah.
There's a tab you can tab on with, if you want to include those, but they're not.
Right. Which you almost have to nowadays, right? Because
if you're judging recruiting valuation, or valuation's a money term, you're evaluating a recruiting class on paper based on numbers, you probably, you know, if you want to get a gauge of how your school's recruiting, you include that.
Yeah.
The transfer portal rankings need work industry wide. It's going to take the folks that do it a little while to kind of get into a groove, just like it did when they started the star ratings 25 years
ago. Why is that? Because I noticed that the portal rankings seem like one guy will have a school second and another one will have the same school 22nd. How would that be?
Well, right now there's a difference fundamentally between the way On3 calculates it, because On3 will also, in your portal ranking, they'll dock you for players you lost. Mm-hmm. And this is the team rankings, and 24/7 just kind of collectively talks about who comes in. That's my understanding. I may be wrong. I don't think I am on that, though. As far as the individual player ratings, it's a different – I think the problem is you have folks and I don't know about On3. I know at 24/7, the same people that do the high school rankings do the portal rankings. Well, that's fine, but – a lot of folks that evaluate, you know, NFL draft people are the same way. They don't want to be wrong. And so you may have a five-star, like a kid, I'll use an example, Micah Hudson, five-star receiver, signed with Texas Tech, 7 passes caught. Transferred to A&M, couldn't cut it, goes back to Texas Tech. Everybody's going gaga over this guy. I think he had 11 catches this year. okay, at that point, you know, and he's a five-star portal guy, Mike, but at that point, he doesn't add that much value to a roster. So it's almost a separate thing. I almost would say wouldn't even use star ratings and maybe assign an impact score and a production score and then merge those together, come up with some numerical. And then if you want to continue to say, but as a recruit, make that 20% of the individual ranking or something like that. I have a whole plan in my head I can't get into right now because of time. But I think the industry, you know, there's a lot of smart people in charge of my former profession, you know, and those guys, they'll come up with something because it's just all over the map right now, right, as far as evaluating the portal classes. But as a fan, you know, if you're looking at how your team's doing, you need to count both. You can't just look at the high school guys because half of them aren't going to be there in 2 years. They're going to hit the portal and, you know, all that good stuff. But, and then again, like I said, most of that drama with high school guys is in June and July. And by August, which is a good thing because players can concentrate on their senior year, everybody's just about committed.
As much as the portal is remarkably flawed and the rampant poaching and free agency and tampering, which every coach I speak to, it doesn't matter the sport, that's what drives them crazy. It's not players making money. They've never been anti-compensation, but we have no guardrails. It's the wild, wild west and all that good stuff. But I love the portal in that I'm not like J.C. Sherbert. I'm not like Tom Luganville. I'm not like all you guys that evaluate high school tape. I don't have time in my diet for that. And frankly, I think it's a lot harder to do. I mean, you have to discern what's the level. Is it class 2A or is it class 8A? You know, is he running an offense? If it's a quarterback, is he running an offense that's never going to work or be run in college? You know, all these things. But I can look at a guy that played a couple years of college football, and I can tell you what I think, and I feel like I'm a much more informed, and I can see that and go, yeah, that's a hell of a pickup, right? Now, that's not universal either. I mean, I didn't watch any of Fernando Mendoza at Cal, I can tell you that. I know that coming out of Christopher Columbus High School, Miami wouldn't even take him as a walk-on, and he literally could have walked to the campus. Not the stadium, but the campus. And I didn't watch him at Cal. Maybe if I did, I'd have a good opinion. I don't think I would have predicted he was going to win the Heisman Trophy. But so we still have some unpredictability, which I think is in some ways good. But I can better tell you what I think about getting a player out of the portal who's been there, done that, as opposed to a 17 or 18-year-old who's played high school ball. So I do like that aspect.
It's a different evaluation, Mike. It's just like what you do with the draft. You know, Mike's really into the draft for those that are just tuning in. I don't want to say it's easier, but you are comparing sort of similar skill sets, and there is tape against college level competition. The guys in the portal have been at least 1 year in a strength and conditioning and nutrition program, so you kind of can see at least the direction their bodies are going. I don't know. I wouldn't say easier. It's probably a little harder because, you know, you're dealing with more proven guys, and there's a lot more pressure to get those right than, you know, something that hits about 600 at best when you're projecting high school guys long term. And then there's hundreds of thousands of high school players and high schools and all that, and it is a little bit smaller pool with college. So, but it's fun. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it evolves because I think at some point we'll get to an area where portal rankings are very important and fans can kind of latch on to them. I just think that they're inconsistent and there needs to be a pulling apart of the process and maybe a wall even between the high school evaluations and the college evaluations. It's human nature not to give up. You know, it's like, I'm not giving up. I'll never let go. I'll never let go, Micah Hudson. And that's just, you just got to do that. So you kind of just, what you do is you kind of pass it off to the college boys and let they have the word on it. And they're only looking at college and then you got to do some different things, but I think that's coming.
I'm nominating you, JC, as the czar of portal rankings.
Oh God.
We're going to come up with an official title. Coaches and fans will all pitch in financially and that'll be your kind of side hustle pretty lucrative one too if we actually did this. Czar of the portal rankings, JC Sherbert. Something to look out for. All right, we always look out for the JC 5. So let me see before I break and we get to this. I don't want to double up. I like going in fresh. We don't have production meetings on this show. We just grip it and rip it. Do you have something on Gus Malzahn in the 5?
No.
Okay. Let me just say this. Gus Malzahn, congratulations on a great career. I think it was time. You know, when he got the UCF job, people thought that was going to be a slam dunk. It was not. When Florida State beats Alabama and Castellanos is running all over the place, that looked like it was going to be a slam dunk. It wasn't. I just did the American Bowl, which is one of those college all-star games similar to the Senior Bowl. And it was on NFL Network and a lot of SEC and Big Ten players and a lot of small school guys. And I think there were five or six quarterbacks that played in it. But one thing talking to coaches there about the NFL is they evaluate college quarterbacks. Like everything. Remember when the Wildcat was a thing, when the Dolphins did that and all these teams, NFL and pro, had a Wildcat package? Mm-hmm. You don't see it anymore because it doesn't fool people anymore. RPO in the NFL, like quarterbacks that run a ton of RPO and that type of offense, it's not working. And Gus Malzahn, his offense for a time, he was on fire, man. I mean, Gus Malzahn with the right quarterback in place at Auburn did a lot of good things. But eventually defensive coordinators watch a lot of tape and they adjust. And I'm not saying that Gus Malzahn is washed up or he just became an idiot. I'm just saying that some of the magic wore off a little bit. And he's got enough money where he can enjoy the good life, so I don't blame him. But he has retired. So a guy that for a while there, you know, we as fans, we know all the head coaches. We know a few coordinators that stand out. And for a while, you said Gus Malzahn, and people were like, oh, yeah, I know that offense, and I know what he brings to the table. But he, of course, has retired. Do you have something on the new college football postseason schedule?
I do not.
That's not in the 5.
I chose to go with non-controversial.
Looking at it. This is, okay, real quick, and somebody mentioned it on chat row. I went back and looked, JC. Super Bowl I, before you and I were born, Packers and Chiefs. They played that in 1967. You know what the date was of that Super Bowl? Take a guess. Like, give me a ballpark.
Maybe it's sometime in Thanksgiving, a little after New Year's. Probably a lot earlier.
Well, close on New Year's. January 15th. We're about to play the Super Bowl this Sunday. What's today? The 4th? So 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th. February 8th. Why do I say that? Because it's 3 weeks later than what it used to be, right? College football, we used to determine national championships on what? New Year's Day, right? Like, you play a bunch of games, and then we had to vote on it and all the silliness that we used to do. We can laugh at it now. Like we look back at it. I'm sure aliens from another planet were just looking down on us and going, wait a minute. Those two teams, one is ranked 1 and one's ranked 17. Number 2 is playing number 13. And then we're going to have 3 polls vote on it. We're going to have a split champ. Yeah, that's how we did it.
And it's that way because of a stupid parade in California.
Yeah. I know your thoughts on the Rose Bowl. But anyway, aliens had a good laugh at our expense for a number of years. So college football is backing it up even further. They're going to have 2 weeks between the quarterfinals and the semis. And then the national championship game just got backed up even further. And I had it in front of me, the exact date.
The 25th.
Thank you. The 25th. The 25th. So we're doing what the NFL is doing. It's all about TV windows. We just keep backing it up, extending the season. I do think week 0 is going to be the new week 1. But I know a lot of college football fans do not like this. I don't like 2 weeks between games at all. But that's where we're headed. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's dumb. And the reason fans are upset about it, Mike, is, you know, the NFL plays every week. I mean, it used to be you had wild card weekend, and that was kind of an appetizer, and a large majority of teams got a bye into the divisional round. Well, now there's only one team per conference that gets a bye. So everybody's playing, and it is the NFL playoffs the last 5 or 6 years have been high drama. Yeah. I mean, made for TV, loving it. And so I think the problem is the stalled momentum. It's just like with everybody talking about these stupid buys. The buys aren't working, people. And I continue to hear the deciders, because there's no leaders, they're deciders, they talk about how they're this reward and all this other stuff. They're 1-7. And the only team to win, I don't think anybody was beating them. You know, they were locked in. The rest of them clearly suffered from a layoff. Most coaches will tell you that. 30 days. Is the same amount of time from the start of practice to the opener, more in some cases. You don't need that much time to rest. And then you got a team that's fresh that basically had a game sandwiched between two bye weeks. They're going to be a little fresher. The byes are fine, I think. I think if you did took a week off before you started the playoffs, that'd be fine. But fans, you know, they don't want to wait around. I mean, it's January. It's an adjustment in and of itself to get used to college football that late. I think the ratings really were, boosted a bit by Indiana, because everybody in the country was talking about it. Mm-hmm. It's the same reason the women's championship game when Caitlin Clark and Iowa played in it was one of the highest rated ever, because that's a story. That's a story that transcends the game. Ohio State and Notre Dame, two of the biggest brands. Notre Dame's the biggest brand. Ohio State's up there. Their ratings weren't so swift last year. And so not as many as some. So I think there's a point to be made for that. I don't understand why, when clearly these layoffs damage the product a bit, and I understand the TV window thing and all that, why they said, all right, well, what's our answer to this? We're just going to move it back further. Okay. That's fine. But and it's not – like the Super Bowl, even the Super Bowl having a week's worth of buildup, taking a week off, it gets old too. I mean, I'd almost rather them just go play, but I understand that. I'm used to that by now. But I just think that it's kind of a tone deaf decision that traces back to a lack of leadership. They're just going to look at it and be like, when can we get the best ratings? All right, let's do it. We don't give a damn what everybody else thinks. And that's just another one of those examples.
Well, the leadership, as we go to break, is Sankey and Petitti, and they're two guys that can't agree on the playoff, and so we're stuck at 12, even though it should be 16, and Petitti's throwing out 24, which I personally think is ridiculous, but that's where we are, and it's going to be 12. That's the way it's going to be.
And 12 sucks. 12 is a terrible number, and I've come to that conclusion. I was all for 12 until I've seen 2 years of this garbage. 16 is how – those are the brackets in March Madness. High schools play in multiples of 16. You've got four pods. I mean, 16 sounds like a great number to me, Michael, but no.
It seems to make sense. And I mean, whatever Petitti's motivation is for 24, and I have theories on that, that's why we don't have 16 next year. Quantrell says college football wants to be a spring sport at this point. Yeah. And Scout Guy – We might be headed that way. It's like baseball and the national championship game in football every spring. Scout Size says, JC, the Tom Homan of the portal rankings. Oh, man, that's fantastic. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll get to the JC5, the other subjects that are going on around the great sport of college football. It's JC Morgan, powered by Advocare. Stick around.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, and Bluffton, and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Go Gamecocks!
Hey folks, want to tell you about our friends at Titan Construction Group really quick. They're a mid-Atlantic-based general contractor, specializes in retail, restaurant, and office construction. TCG strives to separate itself from other general contractors by adding value every step of the process. From project budgeting to estimation, value engineering to construction, they focus on those relationships and not the transaction. Titan builds partnerships one project at a time. Among their clients are Starbucks, Crumble Cookie, Blake Pizza, Home Goods, 15 plus years experience, based in Midlothian, Virginia, and contracted in Virginia, West Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. So get on their website, TitanCGInc.com. That's TitanCGInc.com. Get in touch with Brad if you're in need of a general contractor that focuses on going above and beyond for their clients. That's Titan Construction Group, a proud sponsor of the JC and Morgan podcast.
We're passionate about making sure that the Nest and Wild mattress is the best it can be. Made well and made right. Right here in Tupelo, Mississippi. So how can we do all that? Work. Hard work. And that means something. The Nest and Wild mattress is a move. It's a pride in where you come from and where you're going. So get comfortable. Because this movement is just beginning.
This is JC Morgan
on the Chief Sports Network.
College football forever.
Back to JC and Morgan, powered by Advocare, Advocare.com. Time for the JC5.
It's time for the top topics in the sport. We bring the JC5. Number one.
All right, Mike. The year was 1989. The best movies were Glory, Born on the 4th of July, Do the Right Thing, and When Harry Met Sally. And Notre Dame and Miami had an interesting vote, as we talked about at the end. The Hurricanes won out and were voted number one, despite beating only number seven Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. Notre Dame beat number four Colorado in the Orange and had beaten like four top 10 teams, two of them on the road, had more quality wins, but the Canes had given them their one loss at the end, 27-10, and got the vote over New University of Notre Dame. I've seen a lot of polls, way too early polls, that have Miami and the Irish 1 and 2. If you had to do a way too early poll now, would you take it back to 89?
First off, I loved your intro to that with those movies. You know, you're speaking my language. Cruise should have won the Oscar for Born on the 4th of July. It was easily his best role. He was phenomenal as Ron Kovic in that rather dark Oliver Stone movie, Born on the 4th of July. When Harry Met Sally, of course, is a Rob Reiner film that he's no longer with us. I got so wrapped up in that, I almost forgot the question. Miami and Notre Dame for this coming year.
2026. Are you going to take it back? Because this hasn't happened since the late, when Holtz was at Notre Dame and Jimmy Johnson slash Dennis Erickson. I mean, but I've seen a bunch, and I can't really argue against it now that Miami's gotten Menza, and I think CJ Carr, the Notre Dame quarterback, is going to have a breakout year, and they did a good job replacing their losses on the D-line through the transfer portal in South Bend. It's kind of nostalgic. We never know what these preseason rankings. Clemson and Penn State were top four last offseason and ended up in the Pinstripe Bowl. Yeah. But I can't argue against it right now. And what say you? Is that a logical choice?
Cade Klubnik was a Heisman Trophy candidate. Remember that? Now he might
so
be a
was
day.
Drew Aller.
Yeah. Now he might be a day three draft pick. I'm not going to buy that one. I first off, Notre Dame loses two really good running backs. Watching Jeremiah Love in person this year, calling one of their games at Arkansas. Like, I know we just look at running backs like, well, Notre Dame, it's running backs. Notre Dame will just pluck another one off the tree like Georgia does and some of these other schools. I don't know about that. He was next level special. I am a fan of Carr. I think he'll only get better. But I'm not buying the schedule is embarrassingly weak again for Notre Dame. So they'll roll to another 10 wins, I'm sure. But in terms of national championship good, I'm not going with that. And even with Miami, let's assume Mensa is every bit as good as the $4+ million that he will be able to collect at Miami, as they have gone the sugar daddy portal quarterback portal trenches route. And it's worked very well for them. It's worked very well for the fighting all about the U dogs. By the way, which anybody do, we need to do a wellness check on Michael Irvin, because eventually you come down from that high. Hopefully Mike is okay. We'll place a couple phone calls. Our JC and Morgan medical staff, we'll do a wellness check, make sure number 88 is doing well. Number 47, with the fighting U dogs. But, No, I think Miami, look, they lose Bain. They lose Mezador, the two great defensive ends. They obviously they've got maybe the most exciting wide receiver slash playmaker in the country in Tony. But I'm not so sure Miami rolls like they did. And God forbid the ACC, somebody steps up a little bit, right? Like maybe they're. Maybe Florida State is better, not great. Maybe North Carolina's not a train wreck in year two under Bill. I don't know. Maybe Virginia's good again. Maybe SMU's a little better. I don't know, but I'm going to pass on that, so I'll say no. But I love the nostalgia there. I love where you went with that.
Yeah, Miami also goes to South Bend this year later. Later in the year, they open on a Friday night at Stanford, though, man, that's Miami. Dude, remember they went out to Cal and were lucky to win a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah.
Stanford, a Friday night's not been good. That just screams. And then they got to go to Wake Forest. They don't play a Saturday game till September 26th against Central Michigan. They yeah. go to Clemson. They go to North Carolina, which you mentioned Sunday day. I don't know what they're thinking in Chapel Hill. They decided they weren't going to do portal now. With us.
Right. They've got a top 25 recruiting class.
They signed
but not
40 players.
Yeah.
40. Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. And then, I don't know, not a lot of Jeremiah Smiths from what I can tell. Yeah. You know, Virginia Tech comes down on a Friday. Now they got three Friday and a Thursday game Miami does next year. So. It'll be interesting to see kind of what happens with them. But I just thought the nostalgia was good. And,
I like
you know,
it.
Based on it, like, and I'm a big Mensa guy. I mean, I just kind of jumps around a little bit. But, he's a very talented quarterback. He has a chance to, with Tony and those other receivers, they got Vandrevious Jacobs from South Carolina, who was their best receiver. They got another guy from the portal. The receivers, there's receivers all over down there. So mm-hmm. I think if they can replace their D-line and be good on defense, they can be okay. All right, number two.
Number two.
All right, we talked about paying a bunch of money for quarterbacks in the portal. Brendan Sorsby was the subject of a battle. He ended up at Texas Tech, which is not afraid to spend. He's a Texas kid. He played at Cincinnati last year. $6.5 million is the number that's out there. I believe it because it's Texas Tech, and I think – somehow their numbers get out and they're a little more accurate. But I came across this, Mike. He, again, with drop back passes, and he's more of a scrambler guy, right? And this comes from Clark Brooks from On3, who's a statistician. He's SEC stat cat. Against the six toughest defenses they played at Cincinnati last season, he was inaccurate on over half of his true drop back attempts against good defenses he faced in the Big 12. All right. I thought Texas Tech's quarterbacks, both of them last year, were accurate. I didn't think they had any problems with that position. This guy's a fantastic runner. He's a competitor. Kind of a little Tim Tebow style in him. But that much money for a guy, and this is going to try to drive you crazy because you're a big believer in the forward pass and accuracy. $6.5 million, and considering he is a Texas high school kid and all that matters out there, do you think I mean, could that end up torpedoing what could be a fantastic follow-up to a fantastic season if this guy is not accurate?
Well, yeah. And look, I didn't watch a lot of Cincinnati football. I knew early on, just following the portal as I do, that Sorsby was number one on a lot of lists. And I've gotten to know Cody Campbell a little bit. We're not bowling partners, and he's certainly not going to pay my mortgage anytime soon, although he could with a snap of the fingers. Come on, help a brother out. But I knew that was that's who they wanted, and they're just in a position where money is no object. So they were going to get their guy, and he was the guy. You mentioned the quarterback last year. Forgive me, the name just eluded me because I had the Texas.
Yeah, he wasn't a household name, but he was.
Baron Morton, is that it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And their backup was pretty good, too.
The backup was
Utah,
good.
Utah, he played really well.
Yeah. Baron Morton, I'm going to try to soften the landing here. I thought he was a little bit of the weakness on that team. I love the line of scrimmage. Their defense was SEC quality. Their offense was not, and he got exposed, I thought, in the playoff. I don't think he was a great quarterback. I think they looked at it and they said, well, we're spending all this money, but we're not going to the next level. I mean, they got to the playoff, which is massive for Texas Tech, massive. But they're not going to the next level, making like a deep run without a guy that's got a little more God-given ability, let's just say. Mm-hmm. So Sorsby was the guy they targeted.
Yeah.
And that's who they got. So I think he'll be an upgrade because, quite frankly, I think that position needed to be upgraded. Is he going to light the world on fire? I don't know. You know, is Hoover going to light the world on fire? I don't know. Is Mensa? I don't know.
Yes.
You know,
I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. It's a great question.
It wasn't a great transfer portal quarterback class.
Correct.
Just like it's not a great draft class. You know.
That's a great point. It's a terrible quarterback draft class, which is why we're even talking about some of the guys. I mean, look, I was high on the Alabama quarterback. My brain is scattered
Ty
at this
Simpson.
Point in the year. Ty Simpson. I was high on him all year long. But do I think he's worthy of a first-round pick? I don't know. But he might go first-round out of desperation because it's just not a great – like Mendoza's going to go one, and some scouts don't even think he's a first-round talent, but he's going to go number one. Next year, it's going to be loaded. Next year is going to be a class that's much more – and it'll start with Arch Manning, and it'll trickle on down. But, yeah, it wasn't a massive class. And so I think they got what they thought was the best fit for them. And I do think it's at bare minimum, I think it's an upgrade because I just don't think they were very good at that position.
Yeah, I understand. And this guy, too, even if he's not the most accurate, there's more than one way to run offense, especially in their league. Looking at their schedule, too, it's a glide path to the championship. So they may not need a bunch of it. I just know inaccuracy drives you crazy in the past.
It does.
So I throw that out at you.
All right. Thank you.
I think Phil had to go to the other show, number three. We talked about Notre Dame earlier. Number three. Some sad news in some ways. And look, I want to before I ask this, I do want to say that I hope the next time we're doing this that Lou Holtz is still alive and well.
Yeah.
He's in hospice. I know that you got to know Coach Holtz when you were working at South Carolina when he was there. Mm-hmm. I also know that there's a lot of memories in my life, college football wise, outside of South Carolina that involve Coach Lou Holtz. You know, I'm from Spartanburg County, South Carolina. He recruited a quarterback named Tony Rice from the big city of Woodruff, mm-hmm. which is about 10 minutes from where I lived when I was in high school. So it's, you know, my dad used to talk about Lou Holtz, like in reverence. So I want to ask you a question. Give me two Lou Holtz memories. First of all, up close and personal during your time professionally covering mm-hmm. him. And then just in general in college football lore, just talk about Coach Holtz.
Yeah. You know,
I didn't mention he's in hospice, by the way.
No, you mentioned it. Okay. Yeah, you did. And sadly, there's some, like, there's these sick internet accounts. I'm sure you've seen this, JC. I've fallen for it, I'll admit. Initially, I did. That just report random celebrities are dead. And it's clickbait. Yeah. They just say, so-and-so's dead. And I'm like, what? Sylvester Stallone is dead? How did I not hear Rocky's dead? No, he's not dead. He's living the good life in Palm Beach, and he's making episodes of Tulsa King. But for whatever reason, that is a thing right now. And that, and sadly, also was reported on Lou. I remember Lou, obviously, at Notre Dame. You know, the stuff he did before Notre Dame is a little bit before my time. I don't remember him at Minnesota. I don't remember him at NC State, William & Mary, or the 1 year he was with the New York Jets, which was a disaster. I remember what Notre Dame was when Lou was there. And I was never a fan of Notre Dame. I had friends who were massive fans. And so it was like an event when Notre Dame was playing Miami, that game you mentioned, or that time frame you mentioned. It was an event when Notre Dame was playing a big game. And really, in today's era, like Lou, you mentioned 89. In 93, they beat Florida State, the team that went on to play for the title. But then they lost on a last-second field goal against Boston College. Otherwise, Lou would be sitting on another national championship, just like Spurrier. If we had a playoff back then, those are two guys that would have more than one national championship ring, guaranteed.
Absolutely.
So I was always amazed by the lore of Lou Holtz. I did read Under the Tarnished Dome, and it was not a very flattering account of Lou. But his ability to take programs that were struggling. Remember, Notre Dame was in the gutter when he took that job over. I think he took it over in like 86. And then a couple years later, wins a title. South Carolina was in the gutter and then goes 0-11 in year two. Outback Bowl, back when those things meant something. Wins the Outback Bowl, wins 8 games, wins 9 games the next year at another Outback Bowl. Everywhere he went, he turned it around. And so that's what I remember. On a professional basis, when he was at South Carolina, I would do a talk show in the afternoon at a bookstore connected to Williams-Brice Stadium. And in the middle of the show every Friday, Lou would roll up in his golf cart, grab the mic. We never even asked him. We never even asked him. He just grabbed the microphone and said, "All right, guys, let's talk about the game." And would give us 20 minutes, and, you know, people are huddling around like, that's Lou Holtz. And I have a picture of me just sitting in a chair looking up at Lou working a microphone. And, you know, always the jokes. Some were cheesy, some were monotonous. But I loved Lou, the character. And when he was gone from coaching, I really learned to appreciate him more, because we got a lot of cookie cutter coaches, quite frankly. We don't have a lot of big time personalities and unique guys. He was unique in every sense of the word. So thoughts and prayers to him, his family. I've gotten to know Skip well. I've caught a number of Skip's games at various stops along the way in his coaching career. His wife would always leave us cookies in the broadcast booth before we went on the air. Very nice touch. But yeah, Lou will go down. History will be kind to Lou. History will be very kind to Lou and what he was able to do in his career.
I have one Lou Holtz thing. I was 6 days away after turning one, but I've, in my readings and research, you know, I was the one when I started kind of following college football in 86, I went back and memorized the history. This was probably one of his finest moments in coaching. He was at Arkansas. They played, you mentioned the bowls and how weird it was. Arkansas was 8-3. They're going to play number two, Oklahoma. This is 1978. Oklahoma's 11-0, running the wishbone. Kicking butt. And actually Arkansas was 10-1. I'm sorry. I got that wrong. But their top two players, two of the top players, Ben Cowens, Donnie Bobo, suspended before the game. There was a disciplinary thing. They were 18-point underdogs. He coached them up. They beat Oklahoma 31-6 in Miami. Mm-hmm. Dismantled the wishbone offense. They ran the ball on offense, rolling sales of 205. It's one of the biggest wins in Arkansas Razorback history. And I just think that that's one of those magical moments in college football, really Cignetti-esque almost, where they just were massive underdogs, missing key players, and just beat the tar out of OU.
Down there.
Of course, those two teams are in the SEC.
He was a big-time, big-game coach.
Yes, he could get his teams up for big games.
If you gave him time to prepare for a big game, he was great at psychological warfare. A big-time, big-game coach. How he would do in this day and age with the portal and paying players, I don't know. But I know in his era, he was one of the best. All right, number four.
Okay, who was the most under-the-radar head coaching hire this offseason, and why was it Pat Fitzgerald from Michigan State? Yeah,
rephrase. It's what you call a leading question, right?
I'll rephrase. Thoughts on Pat Fitzgerald taking the Michigan State job? When I think about Michigan State, and when they've been good recently, back in the 60s and 70s, Michigan State was as good as anybody in the country. They were national power. But, you know, from George Perlis and then Nick Saban had a spell there, then Mark D'Antonio really overachieved year after year with that
big
program.
Time.
So when I think about Michigan State, and you got to call a game at Spartan Stadium, large fan base, money, yeah, all that. I think about overachieving coaches, and there's probably not a more overachieving coach in college football in the last 20 years than Pat Fitzgerald. He was out of coaching after leaving Northwest, his beloved alma mater, because of some crap, and he ended up getting exonerated for. But he's back, and it didn't. And they fired Jonathan Smith after 2 years to get him. I think it's savvy, but I want to get your take on that fit at Michigan State for Pat Fitzgerald.
You're talking to a guy who was a huge Fitzgerald fan at Northwestern, and I remember back then I thought this guy could be the next Notre Dame head coach. Fitzgerald to me did more with less. Like, he was one of those guys. Again, there was no portal, there was no sugar daddy at Northwestern. The facilities were lackluster, to say the least. And he's doing stuff there that shouldn't have been done, but he's doing it. So, whatever happened, he gets blackballed. I think it's a brilliant hire. I think he deserved another chance. And I think he'll do well at Michigan State. You mentioned the game that I called there this year, Michigan State. It's the first time I'd been to East Lansing to call a game in 10 years. And they have done a lot in those 10 years. They've spent a lot of money on facilities and everything else. So, look, they're always going to be behind in terms of cachet Michigan. Michigan, who I also think made a very good hire under very bad circumstances in Kyle Whittingham, Michigan's always going to be big brother. I know that's a term that everybody hates, at least everybody that's a Spartan fan. But no, I think that's a good hire. I think you're right to bring that up as one of the more underrated hires because it didn't get nearly the attention. And one reason is it's Michigan State, and they just get lost in the national scope. Mm-hmm. But another reason is people forget what a great job he did at Northwestern. I have not forgotten.
Yeah, and it happened quick too. It's like a Texas style hire. Mm-hmm. You know, the last couple of major hires at Texas, they've literally fired the coach and hired the new guy the next day. They fired Smith, and then Pat Fitzgerald within 18 hours was named. And I'm just, you know, Pat played high school football close to the team that my stepson's team played, Carl Sandburg High School. In Orland Park, Illinois. He's a legend there. They're not very good, but he was back in the day. And I remember when he played linebacker on Gary Barnett, who we had on the show, who we missed some breaking news because he told us 3 months before it happened, Colorado was going back to the Big 12.
Oh, we didn't miss the breaking news. We gave the breaking news.
Yeah, but we should have promoted that a little more.
I know, right? I mean, he literally dropped the bomb and said, guys, they're going to the Big 12, I can tell you. And we're like, nobody has this. But Gary
Barnett was at Northwestern and had a breakthrough season in the mid-90s, went to the Rose Bowl, and Pat Fitzgerald was the middle linebacker on that team. And he was unbelievably good. So
he was
lots of respect for him, and go green, as they say in East Lansing.
There you go. Number five.
All right. Who's going to win more games next year? Just a straight up either or, Mike. James Franklin or Matt Campbell? I love them both.
That's a great question. This is why I love the five. It makes my head hurt. but in a good way. Franklin at Virginia Tech, that was not a very talented team last year. I know he's done well in player acquisition. Campbell, I've been a Matt Campbell guy for a long time, and I like that hire as well. You know what? Because Virginia Tech didn't win. How many games did Tech win last year? Like
four.
I'll go Franklin and Tech because I just think there's more upward mobility, not a strong conference. I'll go Franklin and Tech. Franklin's always been a good regular season coach up until the biggest game of the year, and then his team goes, and that's why he was out of a job at Penn State.
Hey, he's a winner. I mean, he won at Vanderbilt. I mean, they win. That's what I was saying. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Both of these coaches have a significant amount of their players that they – like, there's a significant amount of Penn State players that are not playing for Virginia Tech, and a significant – I think 17 Iowa State players followed Matt Campbell to State College. I'm going to say this. The guys that followed James Franklin probably were highly rated recruits, but I will bet $10 to a donut, Mike, that those 17 that followed Matt Campbell from Iowa State can play some dang football.
Oh yeah.
There's nobody better at evaluating, but I mean, you have to do that in Ames. Those are two fascinating situations.
So you said the biggest improvement, right? Not the most wins.
No, most wins, just most wins against.
The schedule. Just most wins.
And, yeah. And that's a little easier because Penn State's schedule is tougher than Virginia Tech's.
Yeah. Oh gosh. I might change my vote then.
Uh-oh.
Well, because Penn State under, like, I'm like you. I didn't get the Drew Auer. The Drew Auer and the Cade Klubnik fascination, I just didn't see it. And we'll see how they do on draft day. But, you know, now I'm going to change my vote. I'm going to go Penn State because I just think there's going to be more talent in there. And, yeah, they might still lose to the best of the best. But there's a lot of wins on that schedule in the Big Ten.
Yeah, you're kind of right. I may have gone that way too. They play Marshall, Temple, Buffalo, and then
win.
They don't have Ohio State. They do not have Oregon. They don't have Indiana.
Oh wow! Give me Penn State.
They do go to Northwestern to open Northwestern's fantastic looking new stadium. Yeah. They play at Michigan. They got USC at home. Right there in a row, USC, Michigan, back-to-back. But then it's Purdue at Washington, which could be problematic. But then they end with, like, the terrible trio of – they're not terrible. I mean, this is – I was being sarcastic. This is not going to strike fear in anybody. Penn State ends next season with Minnesota at home, Rutgers at home, and at Maryland. Those two rivalry games with Rutgers and Maryland loom large at the end of the year.
I'm smelling 9-3.
And Virginia Tech plays at Miami, at Clemson, and
problem. And just based on talent,
they have SMU, and they got a semi-tricky road non-conference game against Maryland. They go up to Maryland.
I'm going Penn State, Matt Campbell, minimum 9 wins.
All right, there's no wrong answer in the JC5. Yeah.
Well, no, that's why we love playing the JC5. There's no right or wrong. You either do or you don't. And I choose to do. I choose to answer the tough questions with the hot light just beaming in my face like a police interrogation. And I say, you know what? I'm going to answer these difficult questions because I'm contractually obligated to do so. We are contractually obligated to every now and then break out the fiver, the dimer, the neither. Our man, Sam the Man Murphy, always starts off chat row or he's right there at the top. He throws out two of our own. Now, if you're new and we pick up new listeners every episode on Fiverr, Dimer, or Neither, this is where a movie comes on. You don't necessarily seek it out, but very often it'll just come on, whether it's – I love Tubi now. I've become a Tubi-holic, and or Turner or HBO or Netflix or whatever. And even though you've already seen it, you watch it again. If you've watched it at least 5 times, it's a fiver. If you've watched it at least 10 times, it's a dimer. If you hit it and quit it, it's neither. And then sometimes if it's really, really special, if you've hit the holy land, the Mecca, your Ben Franklin status. You've probably seen it close, at least parts of it, to close to 100 times. Not from start to finish, but it pops up on the screen, and you are dropping that remote like it's hot. So, Sam gives two, Waiting and White Man Can't Jump. Let me start with White Man Can't Jump. White Man Can't Jump for me is a Ben Franklin for a number of reasons. Is it the best movie of all time? No. Like I always like to say, Roadhouse is a two-star movie, but damn it, I'm watching it every single time and I'm loving every minute of it. We could have written the plot on a napkin at a Chili's within an hour before we reloaded on the chips and salsa. But there's just something about that movie. It's so bad, it's good. White Men Can't Jump, for me, as someone who played a lot of basketball and used to play on three-on-three tournaments. Three-on-three tournaments presented by Reebok. Me and a couple of kids from high school, teammates, we played in it. We finished second a couple of times. If you won first place, you got a free player of Reeboks. Shaquille O'Neal was a sponsor one year. He'd give them to you. Dominique Wilkins was there another year. Second place, which we won, the silver medal, a case of Cherry Coke. But so much of that movie, and Ben Levinson, I believe, the same guy that did Bull Durham and a number of great sports movies, he picked up on the culture of pickup basketball in a lot of ways. There's a lot of other kind of storylines and themes in that that speaks to the truth. So for me, it's a Ben Franklin. Sam, I hate to tell you, I've never seen Waiting. So I got neither on that. JC, what do you have?
With the Waiting, it's a Ben Franklin.
Whoa!
Dude, it's Ryan Reynolds, and yeah.
How have I not seen this movie?
If you've ever worked in a restaurant.
Of course. I was a busboy at a Chili's and a Bennigan's.
A Bennigan's? It's based on, loosely based on a Bennigan's. You need to get thee to watching that movie. It's hilarious. And just think about the goat.
The goat, dude.
That's all I'm going to say is the
all
goat.
Right.
It's a good Ryan Reynolds is peak Van Wilder, funny Ryan Reynolds.
You shock me sometimes that I think there's a movie where I'll be like, I can't believe you've never seen it, JC. And then you just pull out a Ben Franklin on Waiting.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, that's good. White Man Can't Jump is probably a fiver for me. I enjoy the movie. I watch it if it's on, but that's about it.
Fair enough.
I played basketball back in the day myself, Mike, but never got into the 3-on-3 thing. Wasn't good enough. I could not jump.
You could not jump. Back then I actually could, but that's many years and many pounds ago. I was a skinny rail who could run and jump and could not put on weight. But that's a whole other story. Now I have to put off weight and can't jump. So such is life. Okay, so here's the five and dimer that I brought to the table today. Social Network, Moneyball, Just One of the Guys. Social Network, I was just on a plane going cross country to Utah, called the Arizona BYU basketball game. And Delta usually has a bunch of crappy movies. It's a bunch of crappy pappy stuff that I would never want to watch. And then Social Network was there. And I'm like, that will burn 2.5 hours of this flight. I'm in. And every time I watch that movie, I'm reminded of just how damn good it is. For me, it is a dimer. Your thoughts?
Yes, dimer. Having worked in a corporate office twice at startup tech companies, yes, it intrigues me quite a bit.
The performances are unreal. The music from Trent Reznor. I went through a little Nine Inch Nails phase.
Oh God, yeah, I'm a big Nine Inch Nails.
I went. The Pretty Hate Machine is one of the most innovative albums that I've ever listened to.
Underrated cut on that album is it's called A Warm Place. It has no lyrics. It's just an instrumental. It's real intense.
Anyway, okay. I'll go back. Something I Can Never Have, underrated cut.
Yes. That was a natural. Maybe there
was that girl that you had a crush on in high school. Yeah. Yes. I'm talking about you, Heather. And it just never happened for whatever reason. Yeah. That hit me. That struck hold of me. It was directed by David Fincher. The screenplay is by Aaron Sorkin, who did West Wing and is a brilliant writer. David Fincher, you want to talk about some bangers? on movies that he did. How about Seven? That's a David Fincher movie. How about Fight Club? That's David Fincher, right?
He's unbelievable.
Zodiac. That's David Fincher. Like, he is, I don't know much about David Fincher, but I just know what he's done. Great stuff.
I loved Gone Girl, and his movies,
Gone Girl,
they all have kind of a mood, and he was the executive producer for House of Cards when that was all the rage.
That's right.
And they'd had a feel to it too. You know, that he's a unique movie maker and extremely talented.
Yeah.
And The Social Network is a great fan. And, you know, take just a normal corporate true story like that,
mm-hmm.
with some creative liberties, and to cast it like that, and the dialogue, you mentioned Aaron Sorkin. I mean, it is a fantastic film.
That's the thing. Sorkin, when it comes to dialogue, and I always say, like, I don't want movies about grown men wearing capes, and just, I don't watch a movie for special effects. Show me a little bit of intellect that you can write. He writes. It's brilliant copy every time out. All right, so we're both a dimer on that one. Moneyball. What do you think about Moneyball?
Ben Franklin. I love that movie. It's fantastic. Like another that story based on a true story, but the soundtrack,
a lot of liberties
to it.
A lot of liberties.
Oh yeah, I mean, they made Art Howe look like a, you know. Which would it be? But and that's not Art Howe, you know.
It made David Justice look like a complete a-hole, which he really isn't.
He was not, but, you know. But it was, I thought it was really, really good. Brad Pitt's never made a bad movie, dude. I mean, if you think about it, there's not, yeah. Some people may say this one's better than others, but you never sit there and go, well, Brad Pitt was in this terrible movie. He just hasn't never made it. You know, he's never made a bad movie. Yeah, Michael Lewis takes some liberties too with some things, but Aaron Sorkin, yet again, was the co-writer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Good soundtrack. Yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman, who unfortunately either had a birthday recently or his anniversary of his so unfortunate good. Passing. He was Art Howe, and he was very good. But just the approach, you know, as someone that's covered roster building in another sport for a while, mm-hmm. and now we have the money situation and all that. I can relate to it. And I'll say this. I saw it when it first came out in 2011 and watched it a few times. But the last 4 or 5 years, I've gotten a better appreciation for it because of all the NIL and portal stuff in college.
Adapt football. Or die, JC. Yep, adapt or die. That's the line. That's the line from the movie. It's the line from Brad Pitt when he's talking to the scout. I'll just say this. It's a fiver that's bleeding into dimer territory for me. I find myself when it's on watching it. I wanted to hate this movie. When it came out, being a huge baseball fan, I knew the whole story. I knew everything about all that. And I knew they were going to take liberties with it. And I thought, I'm going to hate it. And I'm going to hate Brad Pitt because I just found the good-looking guy to play the main character in the movie. I wanted to hate this movie, and I wanted to hate Brad Pitt for being in it. The fact of the matter is he's great, and the movie's really good.
Yeah.
So it's a fiver branching into dimer territory for yours truly. Okay, lastly, and this is a little bit of a 12-6 curveball. If you're looking heat, if you're looking for just big name movies, oh, this is on Tubi right now. And I was like, oh my God, I forgot how funny this movie is. Just One of the Guys. First off, have you seen it? If you haven't, I wouldn't be surprised because not many people have.
I've seen it.
You have seen it.
Yes. In fact, I'll go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's a cult classic, right? It comes out in the, you would never be able to make this movie again. Never. But it comes out in the 80s and it's 1985. And the plot is pretty simple. It's a high school girl played by Joyce Heiser, who, by the way, was the longtime girlfriend of Bruce Springsteen. And she thinks she's a journalism major and wants to get an article published in the school newspaper. And the teacher says, I'm sorry, your writing's good, but this is really boring. And she thinks he's discriminating her because she's a woman or a young girl and not a guy. So she dresses up, goes to another school, cuts her hair, dresses up like a guy. Looks like Ralph Macchio. And the hilarity ensues from there. William Zabka Johnny from Karate Kid plays a, get what else? A bully. Talk about typecasting. And there's a dude by the name of Billy Jane who plays Buddy Griffith, who's just like throwing one 99 mile an hour fastball, one line heater after another that we all quoted.
I remember that guy. Yeah.
When I was in school. Yeah. So I'm going timer on this, even though I know half our audience has never heard of the film.
It, yeah, it's a, it's an adaptation, loosely adapted from Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, but
really,
yeah, yeah.
Man, you're just full of tidbits
around
today.
The
no
time
idea.
That it came out. I was what, 10, 11. So any kind of R-rated deal where there's just a, you know, for lack of a better term, some skin, and there is a skin scene. At
one
the end,
which
there's
has
one.
The best, one of the best well, iconic the lines of all time. Where do you get off having?
Yeah, 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 we can't. It can't repeat it. But I remember that, and then I've gone back and watched it. It's a fiver for me. I think I can get the fiver on it. Okay. But admittedly, when I was in sixth and seventh grade, I probably watched it a little more often than I do now.
It's just, I mean, a classic '80s two-star comedy that would never be made today. No. But damn it, if you just want to laugh. It's funny. We hope you've laughed with us and shared many other emotions with us. JC, we know we're on YouTube. We know we're on Facebook and Twitter. Get everybody up to speed for those that listen on iTunes, the latest change there.
Yes, it's Spotify and iTunes. It's JC and Morgan, a college football podcast. Okay. If you go to the screen, this is JC and Morgan, college football forever. That is with 24/7 Sports. I'm no longer affiliated with them, so we had to change the channels. Also on our social media at Chief Sports Net, at Forever College Football, at number four ever CFB. You can check that out. Also, Mike is at Morgan on Air, and I am at JC Sherbert, and we'll have these links up for all of our fans to do. It'll also be on our YouTube channel at College Football Forever Chief. All the links where you can go resubscribe. Apologize for that, but it could not be helped. And sometimes you have to crack a few eggs to make an omelet.
That's right. And speaking of apologies, the schedule's been a little bit janky. Blame me. I am in knee deep in college basketball and doing 2 to 3 games a week. I've just been on the road. I've barely slept in my bed. Sometimes I'll do these from a hotel room. But we'll get back to a more regular schedule when things kind of stabilize a bit, but we're not going anywhere. Got a busy off season, a lot of guests coming up, and college football is a year round sport. We love that. We love you. Steven chimes in. Love you guys. Another great show right back at you, Steven. Appreciate the kind words. Can't think of a better note to say goodbye on. Thanks to Mad Dog Phil Mullinax doing some double duty today. For JC, it's Mike saying so long. We'll see you next time in another installment of JC and Morgan.